Welcome to The Artist Appeals. This is Erin Sparler, and I'm your host. In The Artist Appeals, we interview artists, crafters, photographers, and business professionals about the business of art. I hope you'll join us and enjoy the show. In this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk to an author and artist. She is an amazing painter, creating these huge abstract canvases. And she's also the author of Brave Intuitive Painting. Let go, be bold, unfold. It offers amazing tips and tricks on finding your creative voice in acrylic paint. And her second book, Creative Revolution, Personal Transformation Through Brave Intuitive Painting, is just as fun and fascinating. She teaches courses all over the world, workshops, and they incorporate yoga and dance to find your creative expression. She has a third book coming out, and she offers online classes. Please help me welcome Flora Boley. All right. I'm so excited to have you. Flora, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How do you say your last name? Because I slandered it earlier.
No problem. It's Boley.
Excellent. That's much easier than what I was trying to say. I was trying to stick an R in it and, you know, I don't know. So I have one of your first books, Brave Intuitive Painting, and I just love it. It's so free form and I love the way you use all sorts of different stuff and you work on these huge canvases. Tell us a little bit about your art and what you create and what you're making out there in this world. We always start with the art.
Mm-hmm. Mostly acrylic paint. I do a little bit with mixed media, but primarily I work with acrylic on canvas and paper. And my process is very much based on this idea that I don't have a plan going in. So I'm not trying to execute something that's like preconceived. Instead, I work with a very, like you said, free-flowing, very organic process of layering. So one thing I do is I'm always working between at least two paintings because there's a need for the layers to dry. So I'm kind of
simultaneously.
I like to keep it fresh in that way. You know, I feel like when we're working on a piece for too long, sometimes it's easy to not even be able to see it in a way. So I'm always kind of bouncing between two and letting things dry and giving myself perspective and fresh eyes. Yeah. So my work is quite colorful. Usually I work with a lot of organic forms. Sometimes it's recognizable. Sometimes it's abstract. Usually it's a mixture.
Yeah.
Lots of mark making.
Yeah, you really get your fingers in there a lot.
I do get my fingers in there a lot. Yeah, I paint with my fingers a lot. I use a lot of spraying of water, and I use
so it
often
drips.
Some dripping and just, yeah, I try to just stay focused on freedom and intuition and letting go and allowing my paintings to change and change again. And sometimes that looks like turning them upside down for a new orientation.
Oh,
oftentimes
nice.
Oftentimes it just means like the language I often use is that I try something on and then if it feels like there's energy there and it's working, I might, you know, continue to work with it. But I often am like letting things go just as easily as they came into the piece. So if you see like a time lapse of my work, you just see that things are, it's very lots of quick changes. And so
yeah. Oh, I love your time lapses. Can I just describe your work for a second for the audience?
Please, yeah.
Your time lapses are awesome. So Flora does these things. You work large scale, right? Big canvases.
Usually.
And, you know, I would say you have outlines of figures kind of that sometime emerge, but then you'll often block things out with like white paint right over top. And I see a lot of tribal type of symbols in your work with outlines of leaves or feathers and dots and line strokes kind of in white on top of colored backgrounds. And so, yeah, you really have a layering process of scraping and covering and letting things peek through. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm always trying to kind of move into territory that feels new. You know, that's one thing that I do a lot of teaching, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But I'm often just trying to get people to sort of break out of habits.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's a time and a place for habits, I think, in artwork that can really support the work. But then personally, I'm much more interested in sort of staying out on the edge of what I know. And so, you know, my work has gone through, as a result, many, many phases of what it looks like and the different kinds of symbols I use. And to me, that's what just keeps me personally engaged in it.
Yeah.
I think if I do too many of the same things over and over, I just kind of notice my authentic interest isn't there anymore. So it's all a metaphor, which is something that I'm very...
And what's it a metaphor for? Life?
Life. Yeah, yes. Life. And that's honestly, to me, a much more interesting topic than necessarily just talking about the paintings itself. Because for me, it's much more process. It's about the process. And I, you know, I love making paintings and I love the visual aspects of them as well, for sure. But I just find this territory of personal growth and learning through the art making process to be pretty endlessly fascinating. And so for me, that's like a really juicy, just
I think that's what it's all about. I mean, art is really about the flow state, I find, for so many artists. It's about reaching that flow state and getting in the zone. And, you know, the mark making changes and it evolves. It you know, you have a vocabulary of marks and mark making tools and mark making symbols, but those are going to evolve and change, right?
Yeah.
Just like
I think so. I think what we're interested in evolves and changes. And so something that might have been like a visually interesting symbol to work with at one point, I don't know, for me, if I've worked with something a lot, I sort of feel like, okay, I kind of know that thing now in a way that maybe it loses the interest that it had when I began to work with it. And so then I'm like looking for what's the next thing that I can really get to know, because I think the art making process is such a inquiry and you know, it's like we really get to understand things when we work with them in art.
And I know you use a lot of methods and techniques. Do you evolve through them as well?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm always trying to try new tools and I'm really interested and excited about using non-traditional tools a lot. So while I do use paintbrushes and things that you get at the art supply store, I also am like always out in the world kind of looking for weird things to paint with. So a lot of my techniques, I'm putting that in air quotes, might not be super high tech. You know, I'm like, ooh, a pine cone. What can I do with that?
Oh, that must make some cool marks.
Yeah. I've been painting with a lot of vegetables in the last couple of years, you know, corn cobs and such.
Oh, that's really cool. I love that idea. I love that. So your art is a process, but you also teach a lot and you have these books out. And, you know, in the appeals system here, I'm trying to categorize all this information that is coming from all these different fields. And so the next topic that we kind of talk about is products, because they seem to play one off of the other. You make the art, but you also need to turn it into something that you can sell. How did you come about into workshops and books and stuff like that?
Well, it's interesting. I, for many, many years, just painted, you know, and I tried to make a living that way. And I eventually was making a living through prints and licensing and originals. Okay. But in all honesty, it was like I was just kind of squeaking by in those days.
Yeah.
And I actually hit a point, I guess this was about a little over 10 years ago, where I just started to crave something more. I think I was feeling a bit lonely being a studio artist.
Yeah.
I really love people and I really love all this kind of self-growth stuff that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And so I just found myself in this kind of surprising situation, because for so many years I thought being a full-time artist was like my absolute dream job. And when I finally was there, it was this reality check of like, is this really working for me. And I realized, you know, it's not. And I didn't really know what the answer was. I think oftentimes when we feel, you know we need a shift, but we don't know what that looks like. And so I really sat in that kind of unknowing space for a solid year at least.
And how did you come to it?
Yeah,
how did it come to you?
I was having breakfast with a friend, one of my friends who's an artist. And I was just kind of telling her, you know, like, yeah, I'm in this place and not really sure, but feel like something's missing and I want to do something slightly different. And she said, well, what about teaching art? What about teaching your painting process? And it's so crazy to think now that I had never even thought of that then, but I hadn't. And I just thought, oh, interesting idea. And then she ended up actually writing a blog post about me because I was licensing with her company. And she kind of mentioned in there, she's thinking about teaching art workshops. And I just got a lot of emails in response to her post that.
Oh, the universe told you, man, you got to do it.
It was like a big confirmation. All these people interested in the workshop. And
yeah.
And I got an invitation to teach also in that batch of emails. And so I went to Squam Art Workshops, which is an art retreat gathering on the East Coast. And I had no idea how to teach my intuitive painting process that I'd been doing for so many
years.
I was like,
by fire.
Pretty much, yeah. Just, well, that's how we learn though, right? So I just kind of threw myself into it. And I really quickly, I mean, within hours, I would say, of the first class, just felt that this was something that I was really interested in. And I loved being in the room with people. I really love seeing other people remember that they're creative. I really have a strong belief that we all have creative capacity. And it's really just about flexing the muscles and remembering and showing up and trying and doing it. And so, to see people kind of turn on in that way is really exciting to me. More exciting at this point than my own art, to be totally honest.
Interesting.
And so
you
loved
it. You got a teacher's high.
Yeah, exactly. And I had been a yoga teacher for about 10 years prior to that. So I already knew I loved teaching. And the teaching arena really gave me an opportunity to bring in a lot of things that I do just naturally in my life. So, you know, movement and being in nature and collecting inspiration and painting and sharing and dancing and you know, writing, all the stuff that I really, that's all a part of my creative process.
And you incorporate yoga and dancing into your teaching, don't you?
Yeah, I do. So I was able to just sort of see it all in all of these interests that I've always had come alive in the room together.
Yeah.
With this like teaching format. And it was like, oh wow, this is really satisfying, you know, to like when you just realize like all these different passions actually are connected. And then when you bring them all together, that there's something really powerful there. And so that's what happened. And there happened to be an author scout at this retreat who was from Cory Books. So she was there looking for new book concepts. And so within a week of teaching that first workshop, I was asked to write my first book. And so there was just a lot of, there was a lot of, like you said, like confirmations from the universe. Like it was very much
fortuitous.
Like this is the path that's just unfolding in a very easeful way and a way that felt really right for me that has led me into the most incredible journey this last decade of sharing and writing and teaching and creating online courses and really throwing myself pretty full on into the world of sharing and teaching.
I think it's awesome. You know, I think your class looks like a hellishly lot of fun to take. I want to come to this retreat now. But I've been searching for the common thread for making a living with the arts. And I really do think teaching, you know, they say that teaching is a way to, you learn more from teaching than you almost do from doing. And I think teaching is one of the best methods for going deeper into the arts and into yourself and understanding your topic. But it also provides you with an audience as well as kind of a side benefit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been my experience for sure. I think teaching is really great for some people, some mm-hmm. artists, and I really don't think it's for everyone, if I'm just being perfectly honest. I think you have to have kind of a certain set of interests and qualities to mm-hmm. be a really good teacher. And I think people that love people, love sharing, have sort of a generosity of their process in terms of sharing it with other people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's teaching is, I think, such a beautiful, beautiful path for an artist in that way. And then I think there's a lot of artists that just have no interest in that. Like, they are actually really satisfied in the studio doing their work mm-hmm. alone, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just super personal in terms of what works for different people. But for me, it's been a real gift. And it really has allowed me, like you said, to understand my own work and what I'm doing and my process on a, you know, if you're writing books about it and you're creating courses, you have to do such a deep dive into, well, what am I really saying here? What is this about? And so when I got asked to write that first book, you know, I'd only taught the one class.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. And I was also getting invitations to teach like all these other classes, which I just was like, yes, yes, yes. So I was flying all over the world teaching the thing that I was just so new at and trying to write about it. And it was an incredibly steep and insightful learning curve for me to throw myself into it all like that. But it's been so rewarding in so many different ways.
No doubt. And you know, if somebody doesn't want to teach in person, but they still want to explore their method or document their style, there's such an opportunity to teach through a social media now, you know, through process mm-hmm. videos. I interviewed Jodi Lewis.
Online courses.
Yeah, online courses. You don't even have to build your own website. You can do it through, what is it, Creative Live? And there's a couple of sites, right?
Yep, there's a bunch of things now and just platforms that are built for teaching. So you don't have to create that like I did back in the day.
Yeah. So you've got your own website where you teach as well online. Do you want to talk a minute about that? Like, what was that like transitioning from being this very creative freeform artist to having to create this digital version of this interactive workshop? I mean, you are so physical in your work, and then to translate that into a digital realm. How did you tackle that?
It's been a long process. I really owe a lot of my beginnings with the online course teaching to a woman named Beth Kempton, who she was actually in my very, very first class that I was mm-hmm. sharing about. And she really saw, you know, she just saw me and she saw this process and she thought it was really a great thing. And so she approached me and said, have you ever thought of doing an online class? Well, this was in 2010. And so I think the first thing out of my mouth was probably, what's an online class? You know, it was seriously, like, there were no painting online classes back then. And it's definitely not in like the intuitive painting world. And so she said, well, let me tell you what an online class is. And she had done a lot of research and was really savvy in that department. So I collaborated with her on the first class I created. I never in a million years would have created that course at that time. It wasn't even, like I said, I didn't know what an online class was. And so she really helped me to understand how to put my process into a format that lives online. So there's just so much to that, right? To figure out how to present it and all the videos and so much.
Oh, your videos are beautiful nowadays. They're really lovely. The detail shots and the time lapse. They're just so soothing.
Thank you. Yeah. I figure if I'm going to have someone pay to watch my videos, I want them to be nice, you know, and well done. And so taking a lot of pride in that. And so it's just been, you know, I've created, I think, 6 online courses since that first one. And I love being in the room with people. I really probably prefer that, but
you get feedback.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's such a different experience to be live with people. But the amount of people I've been able to reach through the online courses is just so incredible. I mean, all people all over the world, thousands of people, you know, and so I think there's a, you know, there's a definite upside to that. And yeah. I will say making being on video and being filmed and all of that was excruciating for me in the beginning. I was very, very shy and in front of the camera, very insecure, awkward, I'm sure. But like everything, you know, the more we do something, the easier it becomes. And so I just kept doing it and I got more and more comfortable to the point of being like really comfortable with it now. So I think anyone who, you know, is in that role of feeling like, oh, I could never make videos of myself, you know, I think it's pretty natural to feel
sort of intimidated,
like, that way, you know, but then it just gets easier. And that's been my experience anyway.
Now I got a personal question because I'm a total geek and I've got my own little video studio and stuff like this. But, you know, when you're creating these courses online and filming and you've got these huge canvases and you said you're working simultaneously on two of them, how do you manage that? Do you have an actual studio where you leave everything set up? Do you have drop cloths underneath? Like, how do you do that?
Well, I've had different studios over the years. I built a really nice studio in my backyard a few years ago.
Okay.
So the floor, it's its own world back there, kind of.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Separate building and everything.
She-shed.
Yeah, so it's a pretty awesome she-shed, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, the floor is covered with paint, the walls are painted. It's a painting studio. And when we do a filming project, we bring in the light. You know, I have all the lights, I have all the cameras. I don't keep that stuff out usually because, you know, it's kind of in the way when you're not needing it. I've over the years of creating all this content, I kind of amassed all of the stuff. And so I just kind of bring it out when I need it.
Yeah.
And I've gotten in the last year, a new avenue that's been really kind of exciting is that I've started to do a lot of live streaming, which just, you know, the technology around live streaming has changed quite radically in the last like 5 years, I would say. And even in the last couple of years, to whereas it used to be a serious production with a lot of expensive equipment and, a thing. And now, I mean, it's still a thing. But now I have this little camera called the Mevo, and it's literally like the size of my phone practically. It's tiny. And it connects in with Vimeo as a platform. And so it's just, you can actually live edit different angles on your phone because it's so crazy. Like what is possible now? And so, you download the app on your phone, you connect it to the camera, and then you're just kind of like choosing little, like, now I want a picture of my palette. Now I want a picture of the painting. Now I want a picture of the whole big room. And so I have my assistant, as we're live streaming, just kind of touching my phone and moving the camera angles. So instead of just having it be one shot, which would be what people I think are used to if you're doing like a Facebook Live or something like that, it's much more dynamic to be able to watch something where it moves around a bit. So,
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's really fun. You know, it's like, oh my God, this technology is just available now. And that's worked out really well for me the last year.
Oh, I love it. And then it goes up to Vimeo.
Mm-hmm. I actually have it streaming onto my website through Vimeo. So people log into, you know, because it's like a paid course often for me. So people log into their membership site that's on my website. And then the video is actually streaming right there on the classroom page. But it also can stream right onto Vimeo if you don't have that kind of website. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You have to have a membership on Vimeo, a live stream monthly membership, which I think is about $90. Mm-hmm. So there's a cost there, but if you're able to make money doing live stream teaching, then I think it's pretty brilliant.
Wow, that is really brilliant. I love it.
And I love just being live with people. It's fun. It's accessible. Yeah. And it's, you don't have to do all the editing. You know, I think that's one thing that people get really overwhelmed with is thinking about how am I going to make these videos? How am I going to edit them? All the things, right, that go with that.
Yeah.
And with this, you're just live. And so people know you're live. I think people like live in a lot of ways because it's real, unedited.
Yeah.
And then it's just done.
Does it save it too? Yeah.
Oh, totally. Oh, wow. I keep selling them too. Like once it's recorded and done, people can still buy that course. Even if they weren't there live, they can still watch the video. So
that is so cool. Awesome. You got me wanting to build a studio in my backyard and live stream, man.
Yeah.
That'd be so cool. So you're educating people all the time and in so many different manners. I love that you're on the forefront of this kind of educational online art movement, and yet your art is so freeform too, you know? I think we as artists sometimes think that we have to be old school, whereas really art has always been cutting edge and new. So I love that you're embracing that. What else do you do to educate your audience? Like, how have you educated your audience as to when you're going to be live and where you're going to be at workshops? And like, how does that play out for you?
Well, I've really relied almost entirely on my newsletter list and on social media. Mm-hmm. As the two outlets to communicate with my audience. Mm-hmm. I've been writing, you know, newsletters for, oh geez, ever. I don't know, many, many years. So I've built a pretty nice base there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, having a solid email list is I think it's important. I don't think we should always rely on social media, like, yeah, since we're not really owning those platforms, you know?
Yeah.
So I send out a newsletter about once a week, and I try to make them really valuable. You know, I try to give a lot in the newsletters because I do use them to sell my offerings as well. But I'm very mm-hmm. conscious. I know for me as a person who receives emails, if someone's always selling to me, I'm going to unsubscribe from that. You know,
right.
And so I try to. You know, I have a little video series called Hey Flora, where I just answer a question that, you know, I get a lot of different questions sent in, and then I'll just kind of sit there and like riff on a question, and I have all those. And so I send those out, or I just, you know, kind of just chat about different aspects of whatever, business, life, things I'm thinking about. Just try to make it valuable. I give a monthly downloadable desktop calendar every month design.
That's really cool.
And yeah. So I haven't really done much, you know, traditional advertising, I would say. It's, I love to do things like what we're doing here, podcasts and.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really cool. You know, they say that you should give some more and then maybe ask a little, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I love that you're doing the Hey Flora. That's just so much fun that I think people want to see real people and they want to have a glimpse into a working artist's life, you know, because it's a beautiful dream that they may have as well and haven't been able to explore or whatever's holding them back, you know, they can live a little vicariously, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's often a thing that people are intrigued by, you know, how does that work to be a professional artist? What does that look
right.
like?
Right. Yeah. You know, artists often say that the hardest part of that marketing is really hard. What have you found to be the hardest part of marketing? And do you have any tips or tricks for kind of overcoming that? Because it seems like you're doing such an incredible job of sharing and being on the forefront. Was there any like
Thank you.
Pushback that you had to overcome?
You know, I think I definitely feel like I'm kind of a born entrepreneur in that, you know, from the time I was a little person, I was always trying to like sell whatever I could sell, you know, not whatever, but things I would make, just random mm-hmm. stuff. I'd dig up clay from my yard and make pots and be like, who wants to buy my pots? You know, so I've always thought of the business side and the marketing piece as a creative process in and of itself. And so
that's a good mind switch.
Yeah. And because I think there can be a lot of resistance to it, obviously. And it can feel kind of smarmy and salesy and all of that stuff that obviously no one wants to feel that way, right?
Right. I love that word smarmy. Is that a real word?
don't know. I said it and I'm like, is that a word?
I love it. I'm making it officially a word.
It's like a word. It's like one of those words that sounds like what it means, you know?
Yeah.
Totally. Anyways, I feel like if we believe in what we're doing, so whether that's mm-hmm. our art or our product or a class or whatever it is, if we truly have our heart in whatever it is we're creating and trying to sell, it makes the selling piece a lot easier. So I find, you know, I really believe in the work that I'm creating. I see it helping people in real life. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of feedback around the positive effects it has. And so for me, it's much easier to share and sell something that I believe in. Yeah. And so instead of seeing it as this like icky thing, it's kind of like, hey, I want you to know about this thing because I feel like it could be helpful and you might really enjoy it in your life, whether, you know, maybe it's one of my paintings or maybe it's a class. And so I'm grateful I haven't had a lot of hangups around that. I've just always tried to come from a very heart-centered place, a very real place, and like not, like we talked about before, like not overselling things, but trying to give and be generous and coming from a place of just, I'm just here honesty. With y'all being human, trying to like do good in the world. And I made this really cool class and maybe you would enjoy it, you know? And and I've also never really subscribed to a lot of formulaic marketing strategies that I know are out there. I've always just, you know, my whole process with my artwork is based in intuition my heart and like trust and courage. And so that's how I do the business side too. I'm always checking in with myself. How does this feel? Do I feel 100% aligned with this? And from that place, I can just be myself and share about what I'm doing. And that is the marketing.
I love that. That really resonates with me because that's a really interesting take, this idea of doing the marketing in the same way that you do the art, from your heart and from an intuitive place and allowing it to be. I like that. I like that a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So you are just one person and you are human. And that kind of brings us to this automation and amplifying thing. You've obviously gotten fairly big. How do you do it all? Are there any systems that you use, apps, you know, methods?
Yeah.
How do you, you know, you travel a lot. How do you get it all done?
Well, I have an assistant who works 30 hours a week. So she does a lot for me.
Yeah.
At this point, I could not do it myself. There's too many moving parts.
She local?
She is. She is local. But she works mostly virtual.
Okay.
She could be virtual at this point.
I know a lot of people use a VA and they cost a lot less, or, you know, outsourcing or crowdsourcing.
Yeah. So I've worked with Tina for a couple years and she's also happens to be a graphic designer and she does a lot of different things for me. So she's not only just answering my emails, but she's also updating my website and doing graphics, and she helps me like dream and scheme. And, you know, she feels like much more than like a VA who might just be, you know, having like a list of things to do every day. So I owe a lot to her. but I also have, quite a bit of automation on my website in terms of if somebody buys an e-course, they get an automatic email from me, and then that shows them how to log in, and everything is like, you know, there's people joining my courses every day. And so there really would be no way to be personally sending those emails or something at this point. So it's all quite automated in terms of that kind of thing. Yeah, I have Mimi. Mad Mimi is my newsletter. Mad Mimi. M-I-M-I. And that plugs in. I have a custom WordPress site. And so the Mad Mimi newsletter platform plugs into the WordPress site. So I can connect when I'm creating a product in WordPress, There's a place where it says like what newsletter, or it's not really a newsletter, it's a confirmation email, is attached to this product. So when someone buys this product, and then you can choose like send it immediately, send it in 2 days. And if you want to do more of a funnel where they're receiving multiple emails, you can get that all scheduled in there. So that stuff is very helpful for sure.
Interesting. I hadn't heard of Mad Mimi. I know MailChimp does some automation. Infusionsoft is one of the biggies that you hear about, but it's pretty expensive. There's a whole bunch of them.
I did Infusionsoft for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, it was a nightmare for me. I know a lot of people love that. But it was a great example for me of like, I want to keep my business as simple as possible while still being effective. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and that's a philosophy I carry through like every part of my business. And so,
okay.
Yeah. When I had Infusionsoft for a while, it was like, okay, this is not simple for me. And it just, it just didn't work for me. And I just.
It's deep. I've been trying Infusionsoft myself, and it's got flowcharts and actions, and oh, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Mad Mimi's a lot easier, huh?
Oh, it's just super simple. It's kind of like awesome. MailChimp or something like that. It's much more basic, but it works for me. And I think that's sort of the thing that's most important is as business owners, as we're creating things, we just have to find things that work for us. Even if everybody else is using something else or people are telling you to do this or that, it's like, well, does it work for you? Is it, you know, and just
I like
trust
that.
Yourself.
You give yourself permission to use what works.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I didn't expect to get into the technical stuff with you, but I love the fact that you're giving us some different options like this Mevo camera and the live streaming. Mm-hmm. And these are things I haven't heard from, you know, I've heard of different. That's awesome. It's been my goal with all of these interviews, all the research I've been doing, my whole academic career to figure out how to make money with your art. And I imagine that that's probably what you're trying to do too, right? We all want to do something that we love for a living. Yeah? Totally. Who wouldn't? Who wants a dead-end job? So, after all this research and all these interviews, I've discovered 4 secrets, the 4 top secrets to making money with your art. And now I have a 12-page report outlining the 4 top secrets to making money with your art. You can download this guide for free at howtomakemoneywithyourart.com. That's right, I got that domain name. So just head on over to howtomakemoneywithyourart.com, all spelled out, no numbers, and get your free report on how to make money with your art. So, licensing. You know, you mentioned earlier that originally you were doing fine art and you were doing prints and commissions and some licensing. And I always like to kind of keep things in order so that, you know, we organize things for people. But do you have any advice on licensing and contracts you'd want to share with people? Do you still license your work? Well, you have a book, so that's licensed kind of, right?
Yeah, I do a bit of licensing. It's not the focus of my business.
Yep.
And I feel like there's many more people that would have more helpful things to say about licensing. I've licensed when opportunities have come to me, so I've never actually sought them out.
Right.
I did have a licensing agent for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I do, you know, I have a fabric line and I've done different print contracts. And I used to work with Papaya.
Okay. Yeah, I know that
for
name.
For anyone who knows Papaya.
Yeah, they make beautiful stuff, beautiful cards.
Yeah. And I was the artist that the only other artist they worked with other than the owner, Anahata Kakken. But
cool.
Yeah, I worked with them and it was wonderful. But yeah, I think for me, when I do like business evaluation, if you will, or dreaming into what I could do, like licensing is always something I know I could do more of.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly have a lot of images that could translate into different things, but it's not really where my passion is.
Right.
In terms of just like making products. And so I think that's why I just haven't gone down that road in a bigger way. Contracts are, yeah, that's such, that's like, I have so much resistance to contracts. I have a great lawyer, thank God.
Oh, who yeah, worth their weight in gold, right?
For me. Yeah, I mean, I could never navigate contracts on my own. That is really overwhelming territory for me. So I just have a lawyer that I've worked with for like 10 years. I totally trust him. Anytime I have a contract, I send it his way. And that's been great.
So, how'd you find him?
Oh, how did I find him? I think he was just recommended by somebody here in Portland. Mm. He lives here and he's an arts-based lawyer. That's his specialty.
Yeah, they're hard to find.
He's just really great. He's become a friend and, you know, it's you just want to have a good relationship with someone if you're working with them in that kind of way. So, but yeah, I don't have tons of great advice except have a good lawyer.
I think you've already given good advice. I mean, I just interviewed Michael Woodward, who is like the father of licensing, of art licensing. So we've got plenty of information on that. But I really think it's interesting that you've done some of that. And you're coming at it from a different perspective. You know, he's an agent.
Yeah.
And so he was talking about basically the overwhelm and the glut that has been created in art licensing from the digital revolution, right?
Yeah.
It's and really saying that everything. You really have to niche. You have to niche down. But I think it's important for any artist to understand at least some key terms in contracts and the importance of a good lawyer, and just read your own contracts. Make sure you know, ask questions if you have questions and not feel stupid about it, right?
Yes, that is great advice. And that's something I've really had to lean into because I do feel stupid about a lot of that stuff. And I've just had to let that go, any kind of insecurity, and just remember, you know, I'm an artist. Like I didn't learn this stuff. And so I'm learning it now in real time. And I just ask a ton of questions and I try not to worry about looking silly. And
And well, I imagine when you got your book contract, you said it was the first time you'd ever taught the process and she wants you to write this book all of a sudden. And there's a lot of contracts involved with books. That must have been really interesting to navigate.
totally. Like a whole nother learning curve. And I'm actually writing my third book right now, and it's it's a book. It's called The Art of Aliveness, and it's really all about the way that the creative process is a metaphor for living, and all of the juiciness that is in you know what we learn, like what I've learned over the years from painting and teaching, and how I've seen it play out in people's lives, and so. But it's a whole nother world, because this is not an art book, whereas my first two books were like picture, you know, lots of full color pictures, and I'm talking about my painting process, and they're published from a art publisher. Now I'm working with this is just a book of words, like an actual book, you know.
Interesting.
So I'm in this like a whole nother learning curve about, you know, how to write a book with 50,000 words, and it's been awesome. I've been feeling very honored to have the opportunity to do it, but it's like a whole nother thing I'm having to learn about.
That's fascinating. So that brings us to the S in appeals for success. What do you feel like is a measure of success for you? You know, I think we as artists sometimes bounce from accomplishment to accomplishment and we don't stop to celebrate necessarily. We're just always reaching for the next thing, trying to knock out the next idea. Like, how do you stop and celebrate your successes and take note of them and measure them?
That's a great, really great question. It's something that I've thought a lot about because I have had quite a bit of like outward success, you know, in the things that I've done, like a lot of things have taken off and all of that. And there's this whole other piece to success for me, which is actually more important than any of that. And that is my well-being and my like soul care, if you will, how, you know, just how I'm doing, like emotionally, spiritually, physically, mentally, all of those things. And to me, like I definitely went through a period of getting extremely burned out because I just went for it. You know, I once this teaching thing started taking off, I was like just going for it. I was all over the place and doing all the things. And
yeah,
it really caught up with me. It really caught up with me. And I had to take a really serious look at that and ask myself, like, well, what am I sacrificing here for this quote unquote success?
Right. And you said you were traveling a lot too, which can really cause burnout.
Yeah, I was traveling a lot. I still travel, but it's yeah, much less these days.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I don't actually feel like a whole lot of people are talking about it. The other kind of success, you know, how to make the money and like get yourself out there and have all of that. And then it's so easy to just forget about like, well, you know, how is this like, again, back to, is this working for you? You know?
Right.
And so for me, there was a period where I was like, I grew my team. I had four people and like we were having all these ideas of different things. And then I just had to be real with myself. And I really just came to this point of going, you know, I want to keep things simple. I want to have one assistant. I want to have software that works for me. I want to travel only a little bit. I want to, you know, just create a life that works for me. And I don't want my business to be the overarching like thing in my life. I want it to be something that supports my life. And I think it's tricky for artists because oftentimes we love what we do. You know, we love what we do. We're passionate about it. And so it's a slippery slope. It can take over our lives. And I have been absolutely, that has happened to me for sure. And so I've done a lot of recalibrating, very conscious recalibrating, putting a lot more boundaries in place, really prioritizing my self-care. Now I just think of self-care as my work because so much of what it helps me to think of it that way.
Self-care is not selfish.
It's not selfish. And you know, if I'm talking about aliveness and the art of aliveness, you know, a huge part of that is how we take care of ourselves. And whether that's creative health or physical health or mental health. And so I just kind of see it all as my work these days. Where it's just as important for me to take a walk every day as it is to answer my emails and that kind of thing. So just sort of like changing the lens of how I see different aspects of what's important.
In a way, you're saying that your self-care has become your work, that you're, I love that. I love that idea that, you know, you're walking the walk, you're talking the talk. And so your self-care is your business.
Yeah. It really
it should
is.
Be for everyone.
Yeah, we're really coming out of a paradigm around that. I think it's shifting, you know, but I think that especially in our culture, there's been such an emphasis on achieving and working hard and like being busy is this badge of honor and all of that. And
it's the just Puritan work ethic.
You know, it's like, forget it. Like that is like, that's starting to feel really old to me. Like an older way of thinking. But we're still, you know, I was definitely brought up in that, you know, born in the 70s. And like, it's deep in me to be sort of a workaholic. So I've had to, it's just something that we had to be conscious of.
I love that you scaled back. That's really incredible that you took that time to reflect and to simplify. That's amazing. Did you do a lot of journaling or how did you put yourself in that space that allowed you to do that?
You know, I used to do a lot of journaling. I haven't been doing that for a while, but I just do a lot of reflecting. And then I also have a really incredible group of creative women entrepreneurs who are my dear friends. And so we have text threads. We get together multiple times a year. There's just, I could not navigate what I do without them. That's how I feel. And so many of us have been on the same trajectory of like launching our businesses about, you know, 10 to 15 years ago. Now we're all in our 40s and we've been doing it and we've been pioneering a lot of things and on the internet and different ways. And so many of us were hitting burnout at the same time. So right. It was incredibly useful and supportive to have people in that same boat. And so we have navigated those waters together, and a lot of us have scaled back or just shifted different, you know, there's so many different things you can do to shift your business. And so I'm really grateful to have
that. I want to dig into that for just a second, because sure. I think that's really interesting, because essentially what you're talking about is a creative mastermind. You hear mm-hmm. a lot online about these mastermind groups for entrepreneurs and for marketing and for selling. And of course, they're focused on the financials. You know, how do you hit six figures? How do you hit seven figures? These types of things. But I think creatives need masterminds too. How did you connect with these women and come to that space? How did you find them?
Yeah, it was pretty organic. A lot of them I met through teaching.
That makes sense.
Like we'd all show up. I mean, that first time I taught at Squam, I met a couple of them there. But just through the world of, I would put myself in the category of like soulful creative entrepreneur. So there's like a real kind of emphasis on like personal transformation and things like that. And when I look at this group of women, we all have that in common. And so I think we've just naturally kind of found each other.
Yeah, but did you say to each other, hey, let's get online and meet every month? And because you said you have text threads and stuff like that. Like, was it ever actually articulated, or you just...
I mean, we're just really, honestly, like, they're my best friends. Like, they're like, we're just super, I just got back last night from my friend Pixie's house, and there was a few of us there, and there's actually a couple of them in my house right now. We're just, we're good friends. We're good friends. And so we would probably never use the word like mastermind, although that does fit what we do. We've done this thing, we call it radiate sessions. And basically, we come together and each of us just gets the opportunity to share and kind of be the focus of the group. And we can just use that time however we want, you know, like asking questions or getting reflections or feedback. And it's just a really super supportive, wonderful thing. And I think it's really available for people. I think oftentimes, especially with the internet and social media, like you see groups of people doing things like that. And it's like, oh, I mm-hmm. wish I had that. And I really think it's like up to you to create it. You know, it's like reach out and invite people. I think everyone wants to be invited to something like that, you know? And so I'm always encouraging people to just like create, whether it's just an art night, you know, where you just get together and make art, or if it's has a business focus. I think from what I have witnessed through my years of teaching is that everybody's craving community and authentic connection and support ways. And I think so many people are just see it and they want it, but they're not actually doing anything to create it. I think we just need to kind of take that into our own hands. And even if it's just one art buddy, you know, somebody that you connect with and stay supportive with. Yeah. So our group just happened really naturally over the years, but we've put in a lot of time together at this point. Like we have, but yeah, it's been a decade of friendship and support.
Oh, I think that's brilliant. I love the idea of the radiant, you know, where you pick one person and let them focus. Because, you know, it is easy in a friendship for sometimes it to become a little lopsided, if you will, if one person is maybe more outgoing or whatever. So taking turns like that is great. I love it.
Yeah, everyone just wants to be listened to.
Yeah.
And I've heard, you know.
Yeah. I love your point about people wanting to connect with the internet and all. We think we're so connected, but I think we actually are maybe a bit more divided, like overwhelmed, you know?
Yep. Yeah. So, a little more isolated. It's easy to isolate behind the screen for sure.
Yes. Yes. And to become distracted even in your own personal interactions.
Yes. Yeah.
So. Well, I always like to close with a question about books, blogs, podcasts, and I just love to ask people, is there any book you recommend? And it could be your own book, but it could also be a totally unrelated book or blog or podcast or anything like that. Is there anything out there that you just adore and you'd love to share with the listeners and say, hey, you should check this out?
I'm currently just so obsessed with actually my friend Pixie Pixie Light Horses series of books. There's five of them now, I believe. Pixie Light Horse. She's created these books that are, they're pretty small and like they're just, she's just an incredible writer. I always say, I'm like, you're like the modern day Rumi. She's just streaming wisdom from so many different directions. And it's the kind of book you can just open to any page and it's like really potent and helpful. So not exactly an art book per se, but I would highly recommend her books to anybody. And
I'm writing it down. I'm going to check them out.
Good. Yeah, that's a great one. That's a great one.
And of course, we'll put links to all this stuff that we've talked about in the podcast down below. So check that out.
Perfect.
But yeah, I'm a big reader. And so I love a good book. So that's a new one for me. Awesome.
Oh, good. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. And of course, your books. I can't wait to see your book. This new one sounds really fascinating. I think I have your first one. I don't know if I have your second one. But to see you do words and metaphor, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, I feel really good about it. I'm about halfway through right now. It'll be coming out in 2021. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's exciting.
For it. Well, excellent. Well, Flora, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. This has been so much fun and so much good information. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all your great questions. I really love chatting with you. It was great.
Awesome. Well, that's it for The Artist Appeals. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed recording it. I just love talking with all these artists and business people. It's phenomenal, and I've learned so much. I hope you've learned something too. You can get more information. You can check out some of the links that we talked about in these podcasts at theartistappeals.com. That's theartistappeals, APPEALS.com. Thanks and have a good one.